The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Regular listeners to this show will know that we have been championing the cause of women gaining access to our maternity services with their partner for some time now. The HSE has, of course, issued guidance to all hospitals around when partners should be allowed in. The latest update was that 4 of the 19 maternity units were not compliant when it comes to emergency presentations. I wonder how many more are actually compliant with the spirit of the regulations rather than the regulations themselves. Anyway, this has left a lot of women confused about the restrictions, wondering what will happen when they arrive at their hospital door. I mentioned somebody got in touch with me by email today who is terrified about the next 3 weeks, the last 3 weeks of her pregnancy and what might happen. My next guest has unfortunately experienced the worst that can happen with pregnancy. Rinoc is on the line. Rinoc, we appreciate so much you taking the time to speak to us here in the show. Can you explain to me and to our listeners what you've experienced over the last year, 18 months?
So yeah, at the beginning, COVID, last May, we had a first miscarriage. We were 11 weeks and at the time, really, everybody was really compliant with the restrictions. And I'd phoned ahead and they said, you know, my partner couldn't come with me. So I think at the time I was a little naive as to the whole physical process of miscarriage. We had a healthy pregnancy, you know, in 2018 in CUMH and everything went perfect. We had a lovely little girl, Jane, who was nearly 3. And you know, I came straight into the hospital after talking to the nurses and it quickly progressed into a medical emergency, really. They said I would have needed an ambulance if I hadn't come in, you know, within the 10 minutes. So I couldn't have my partner with me, so I was texting him, you know, that I was going for an ECG and that they were talking about a blood transfusion. And I think at the time you're just processing it all and you're just saying, look, I'm going to be okay, I'm fine. But this is clearly a miscarriage, you know, and you're saying this to your husband in the text messages and they won't confirm it until they've done a scan. So they confirmed it later that night. It was about 10:30. So, you know, I was an inpatient that night and I was due to have a DNC the following morning. So it's just very lonely, I think, because it's not until you kind of reach the doors of the A&E in a wheelchair and, you know, if this unknown nurse rubs your back in the complete absence of your partner, that you realise that you've obviously lost your baby. And the nurses there couldn't have done enough. Mm. And, you know, I had heard that it was done under the spinal epidural at the time, so I declined to have a DNC because of that. And unfortunately, we got through to the 8-week scan again in November, and at the 10-week scan, we found out, I found out at the scan on my own that the baby had stopped, you know, growing. So my first question to my lovely consultant was, is it still under spinal epidural? And I felt like that was a very vulnerable question to ask him. You know, the first question was that, and he said, yes, there is talks of the general anaesthetic coming back, but at present it's not.
So just for people, sorry to cut across you, Rinoc, and just conscious of people listening maybe who for whom these terms might be alien, you're talking about being awake for the DNC, and the DNC is a medical procedure essentially to, let's just be blunt, there's no other way to be than blunt about this, it's to clear out what remains of the fetus.
Yeah, essentially, and when I found that out in May, I was actually horrified to think that women, because we had already lost our baby and it was placenta that was remaining. And I could deal with having placenta. I could deal with doing that at home on my own through, you know, the use of medication. I was able for that. So basically we had to go to the hospital the following, it was on the Friday night. I had to come out and tell my husband that again, you know, the baby had died. And, you know, you go back to the hospital the following Tuesday. And, you know, I thought, this is the opportunity now. I've had a miscarriage, you know, let him come in with me up to the, the Ashling suite where he can be with me and, you know, maybe say goodbye to this baby because he hasn't seen the last baby either. And no, I was told by a secretary to go on your own and bring a mask. And those were the words, as simple as those words, like how stark, really. So I went on my own and I wore my mask, and they had to rule out a twin pregnancy, which thankfully there wasn't. It was one baby. And, you know, they had to do that flat line.
Yeah.
I suppose I hadn't thought that far ahead. That was probably the saddest thing I've ever seen on my own, to see that without my partner being with me. And, you know, you're ushered outside the door and you're put behind a curtain. The blue curtain in the Ashling suite.
The flat line is just literally the evidence there on the screen in front of you that your baby's not alive.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a very visual, picture. I think we all know it from the movies, but I just really thought, okay, this is the opportunity now for the dad to come in, because you've had that tick the box, you know. But no, there is no opportunity for the dad to actually be present at all in the closure, nothing, you know, it wasn't there, it wasn't given. And I suppose 2 days later, we had to have the DNC. And now, thankfully, and I saw the strange thing, the general anaesthetic had come back as an option 2 days before my procedure. So I went for my COVID test and I was negative for COVID. Therefore, I could have a general anaesthetic for my DNC. Now, I was a private patient going into the hospital, and I had my consultant with me and he had done the procedure. And I was very conscious of being in a room with women. And, you know, you do hear other people's stories. And I had heard the lady across from me ask, am I getting the spinal epidural or the general anaesthetic? And she was told she was having the spinal epidural. And I really felt, in essence, that there wasn't any choice for her. And she put on her headphones, for obvious reasons, and went off on her own for surgery. And I just thought, I'm going to have to speak up for you, because this is absolutely scandalous. That for 7 months, this procedure has been done under spinal epidural. Now, this is for DNCs under 12 weeks. The bereavement midwives had, you know, reassured me that for women that their pregnancies were over 12 weeks, that it was done under general anaesthetic. But I really wonder where HICWA are in all this, because from working in residential care, you know, if there's a sniff of injustice, you know, HICWA are there to investigate. And I think when you're navigating COVID, you know, and I get the risks within, you know, the general anaesthetic when you're aspiring into a room, but there's COVID testing, there's risk assessments, there's, you know, there's so much that could have been used within 7 months, and there was never given that opportunity. I think it's shameful that it took that long. Like, it's done under general anaesthetic for a purpose, you know?
And so that's a miscarriage in May of last year and a miscarriage in November of last year?
Yeah.
And what's happened most recently?
So we found out the week before last we were pregnant. So I suppose really we had the safety net that the restrictions were removed for when the case of miscarriage. I really, really thought it was very much a planned pregnancy. And I thought, look, Derek, we can do it together this time. You know, you can be my advocate and you can be your own advocate, because it's together, you're the dad. And it gave me a little bit of power, and I thought, you know what, it won't be so bad if the worst thing comes to it and we have another miscarriage. So we did, we had another miscarriage 2 days ago. It was much earlier this time, but I really, really felt walking in the doors that he would be allowed in with me. And I felt it quite deceitful, actually, to think. And we really, really championed to get in the door. He used his voice. He's a very calm, articulate man. And there was no way of getting past the admissions. He was told to wait outside until it was confirmed. So, you know, I had to wait inside there. We had a lovely bunch of women waiting. There was a woman labouring. She had been there labouring for 2 hours because she was there for my whole duration. She was labouring on a chair. And there was, you know, there was even a woman saying that she had difficulty hearing. Could when her name was called, could we, you know, tell her?
Yeah.
Other women were coming out with their scan photos. So it was just a mixed bag of women put together in a room going through completely different, you know, experiences. And, you know, there we were asking each other, were we okay? And can I get you anything? And there was a lady at reception crying because she was separated from her husband. And I just thought, this is the way our maternity is. I'm just so deflated from the whole thing. I have two really good friends that are going through, you know, fertility treatment that, you know, like myself, have had two losses in CUMH alone in COVID. And I just think nobody knows what precedes a pregnancy.
Yeah.
And for them, it's the absolute torture of fertility treatment. And one of them has had 4 miscarriages. So it's just, you know,
to have to do it alone.
Yeah. And I can come on the radio because I'm a mum and I have a lovely, healthy, beautiful daughter, and I feel so, you know, really, really blessed to have her. So I feel I have power in that, you know. I do. I really, really do.
Well, Rena, we appreciate you telling your story to us today on the show.
Kieran, I really, really want to, you know, thank Linda Kelly as well from Women Ascend. She's just the most selfless, you know, advocate that we can have, because she makes you feel really powerful, you know, and she just doesn't take any credit herself. She's just a very special person, and I want to really thank her. And I think there's a lot of women in Ireland that want to thank her for all she does for this. So, thank you so much to News Talk, because each week you've been covering it, and it's really, really supportive. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you, Rinoch, again, for sharing your story. We're going to speak to Linda Kelly, who has been campaigning on this, a little bit later in the show. We'll put a question of this issue as well to Paul Reid, the boss at the HSC. In the meantime, I'm joined by Peter Boylan, former master of the National Maternity Hospital. Peter, I know you're retired from clinical practice for some time, but can you understand the justification, say, for that situation? Rinoch turns up at a maternity unit, quite obviously miscarrying. She knows she is, and her husband has turned away.
Yeah, it's extremely distressing for a lot of women in the same situation who really would need support from their partners. One of the things I think that would be useful to consider would be the use of antigen tests. Now, I was recently in Germany for family reasons. And before you can go into a restaurant or a cafe, you have to get an antigen test. But there are a lot of small units around the city, and you go in, you get an antigen test done, and you get your result back in 15 minutes, and you show that then in the cafe or the restaurant that you want to go into, or the shop or whatever, and there's no problems at all with it. So I'm not sure why that can't be done in these situations in Ireland. And I think it's important also to note that probably most of the staff are fully vaccinated in the hospitals.
Mm.
And increasingly, people in the age group who are going in with these pregnancy problems and with no problems during pregnancy, but just to have a normal birth and so on. Increasingly, I think in those age groups, there are both partners are increasingly likely to be vaccinated.
Yeah, we've spoken to people in that situation where they're both partners fully vaccinated, and again, one of them being turned away and told to wait out in the hospital car park. And come Monday, the situation becomes even more incongruous, doesn't it? Because those same two people, that couple, will be able to use their vaccine status to go for a pint in the pub around the corner, but one can't comfort the other in a maternity hospital when they're getting the worst news possible.
I know, yeah, it seems terribly unfair, and I think it is terribly unfair and extremely distressing for the people involved. The advice from the HSE is to all of the maternity units, standard advice, And they can make exceptions on compassionate grounds, particularly if people are expecting bad news. But it's up to each individual hospital. And it may be in some circumstances that they're concerned about their infrastructural deficits. But really, to be honest with you, with a bit of common sense, use of antigen tests, and if people are fully vaccinated, really, what is it that they are trying to protect people from? Is it fear that the staff will get infected from a partner coming in? Well, if they're all vaccinated, the likelihood of that is extremely remote, particularly if they're wearing masks and you know, a reasonable amount of social distancing, looking at a scan from a few feet away. Are they worried that the people themselves will get COVID from going into the hospital? Well, if everybody's vaccinated and so on, and the numbers of people in hospital with COVID are relatively low now. So I'm not sure what the rationale for it is.
Am I too cynical, Peter, in suggesting that it's the same rationale that underpins a lot of decisions when it comes to administration in public or civil service bodies, and it's the CYOA, cover your own ass, and they're just worried about blowback?
There might be a little bit of that, but I think it's possibly a little bit of unthinkingness, really, and not considering the distress that people are going through. And when you're working in a maternity hospital, you're dealing with people in distressful situations all day on a regular basis. And so it may be hard sometimes, not always, but occasionally people may find it difficult to identify identify the pain and the distress that a particular woman is experiencing. Because to people working in the hospitals, this is an everyday occurrence. And so they're so used to seeing people distressed that it may be just difficult for them to say, look, we've got to be a little bit more flexible here and a bit more compassionate. But I think it should be the consultants who are leading the units are the ones who should be making the decisions about who should be allowed in and under what circumstances. And I don't see any reason why an individual hospital could not initiate in these circumstances antigen testing. They can do it maybe in the front hall. They can maybe do it in a car park. Mm. There wouldn't be that many people coming in who needed to have a test. By the same token, I think it's important to say that there were 75,000 births in Ireland in 2020, and there were no maternal deaths. Now there were some baby deaths from placentitis, from COVID inflammation of the placenta, but that in comparison, for example, with the United Kingdom, where there have been several and many, in fact, maternal deaths from COVID. But there have been women, over 20 women, as I understand it, in intensive care during the past year because of COVID. So it's not to be taken lightly. And I think the general advice should be that every woman of childbearing age should get herself vaccinated if possible. And of course, everybody, obviously, and they're down now to, what is it, 18 plus age group?
18 plus, yeah, the registration portal is open for you. And that advice, I think we would echo it, to register for the vaccine as quickly as you can, because it is the way out of all of this. Peter, we appreciate your time. Peter Boylan is the former master of the National Maternity Hospital. Stay with us here on News Talk, because Paul Reid, the boss of the HSE, is going to be joining us after 5 o'clock. We're going to talk to him about this issue. We're also going to talk to him about the latest on Delta, about breakthrough COVID cases in those who are double vaccinated, and about pressure on the hospital system. So plenty to talk to Paul Reid about after 5 o'clock. After this very quick ad break, though, we're going to be talking to Owen Sheehan about what we should be looking out for at the Olympic Games.